The story has, of course, gone national. A Waterbury woman accused of holding her stepson hostage in her home for over 2 decades while also starving him. This was the story that broke not only headlines here in Connecticut, but across the country. And while that investigation continues, it leads to another question. The person involved in this investigation, the victim, who again alleges these years of abuse and being held captive and not eating and drinking out of the toilet. I mean, some of the things that police have outlined in this case are just gruesome, cruel, horrific. And police say, whether or not it ends up being that the stepmother did in fact do these things, if there was somebody else and she knew about it, whatever the case may be, there was horrific trauma going on clearly to this 32-year-old man for a very long time. That is very clear. And so it leads us to a question. How do you even turn a page and recover and try to find some kind of a normal life ahead when you go through what this person did allegedly go through? So we are talking to the chair of psychiatry and behavioral health at Hartford Healthcare in the Fairfield region. Dr. Tobias Wasser is here. And talk to us, Doc, about maybe not this case in particular, but people who go through incredible trauma like this. Is it possible to live a quote unquote normal life again?
Hi, good morning, Melissa. So as you said, you know, without knowing the details of this specific case, I wouldn't venture to get into it. But in general, when people have been through horrific trauma like this, it is possible to recovery, but recovery is a long and slow process that will take likely years until the person's able to return to what you might consider an average life.
What can we speak generally about, Doc, when we talk about children held in captivity? I mean, is there research you could share with us about that and what it tells us?
I mean, I think the research into children who have been abused tells you what you'd expect, which is that they have a very, very difficult path ahead of them. And now, of course, there are different forms of abuse. There's different forms of neglect, and there's different severities of that. And as you would imagine, the more severe the trauma suffered, the more difficult the road ahead, their ability to function in school, in work, to have trusted relationships with peers, loved ones, is significantly damaged. And it takes a village to bring these people back.
And I want to just reiterate that we are not talking, I'd say, specifically to the Waterbury case, because it is very fresh. We're not even 2 weeks into the investigations and court, you know, court appearances and all that. I mean, it's very early on. But just generally, we are talking to the chair of psychiatry and behavioral health from Hartford Healthcare's Fairfield region, Dr. Tobias Wasser. Dr. Wasser, what could lead someone to hold a child captive for so long? Again, this case was over 20 years, but in general, we have heard of these types of cases nationally, even internationally. So what could lead to that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And certainly this is never a one-size-fits-all situation. There are, and often we don't fully know why people engage in horrific behavior like this, what would cause someone to harm a child. What we know from the literature, the scientific literature, is that often people who harm others have been harmed themselves. And so one of the common sayings in behavioral health is hurt people hurt people. And that's often the case. And so, you know, without knowing any of these details, we could imagine that in similar situations, people who perpetrate abuse have often been abused or neglected in some way. Sometimes they themselves have elements to their personality that maybe are pathological, that require treatment that has been unaddressed. And sometimes there may be aspects of substance use or human trafficking. There are all sorts of reasons. So it's hard to give a one-size-fits-all answer.
It reminds me a lot, Dr. Wasser, of domestic violence. A lot of times the research will show that most times the abuser in that case or the attacker either grew up in a household where they saw it, they witnessed it, or, you know, that behavior was thrusted upon them. They were the victims of, you know, abusive parents or grandparents, uncles, what have you. It sounds very similar to that.
Yeah, well, I do think there's a parallel. So for all of us, when we are young and we're in our early developmental stages, our environment makes a strong impression on us and on our brain. And there's actually now been a lot of research that shows, you know, we used to think about, is it nature versus nurture? And what the most recent science tells us is it's not nature versus nurture, but in fact, the nurture, the environment you grow in up in, actually changes your brain. It changes the chemistry and the biology of your brain. So the nurturing environment, whether it is highly nurturing or not highly nurturing, can have a significant impact on your developing brain and your learned behaviors moving forward. If you learn that the way to respond to stress or conflict is to become aggressive because that's what your role models did, it increases the risk that you may in the future engage in those kinds of behaviors.
You've been locked in that room since he was 11. He was given 2 cups of water per day. You've been locked in there since fourth grade.
You're hearing just a snippet of what police have revealed in the investigation about the victim, who is now 32 years old and had been enduring prolonged abuse, starvation, severe neglect, and inhumane treatment. This is the case out of Waterbury that broke earlier this month. And Kimberly Sullivan, who is the stepmother in this case, is facing multiple charges, including assault and kidnapping. And while her attorney says that she is innocent, denying the allegations, police say, regardless of who did this to this man, he is, again, a 32-year-old man weighing about 68 pounds and had to set the house on fire in order to escape what he called his own living hell. So I want to ask how you kind of move forward. What sort of treatment could somebody go through in order to move in some sort of positive direction from this type of trauma? And so we have Dr. Tobias Wasser here with us from Hartford Healthcare. And again, I know we can't speak to the specifics of this case, Dr. Wasser, but give us just kind of a general idea of what sort of treatment options are available to somebody who goes through such severe trauma like this.
Yeah, so the treatment options for someone who's been through severe trauma depend certainly on the kind of trauma they've endured and the degree of the symptoms that they're experiencing. So the most well-known disorder that people suffer from following a severe traumatic event or series of traumatic events is called post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. I think this is something that people are somewhat commonly aware of. And this involves a constellation of symptoms after someone's either been exposed to or witnessed a potentially life-threatening event. And they begin to have what we call re-experiencing symptoms. So they will have nightmares or flashbacks of the event. They may become highly anxious in public settings. They become what we call hypervigilant, meaning like extremely aware of their surroundings and worried that danger is around any corner. It can significantly impact their mood, cause them to be depressed, even suicidal. So the treatment that we're going to offer them is going to really be focused on the nature of their symptoms. And it's important to remember that not everyone who goes through horrible trauma experiences PTSD, but many do. And so we're going to target our treatments based on what their particular experience and symptoms are.
Dr. Wasser, do you ever utilize EMDR therapy, the eye movement therapy? I know that's used a lot for PTSD, for the military, and for like law enforcement, firefighters.
Yeah, so there's a few different kinds of psychotherapy so that are specific for post-traumatic stress disorder. So you know, psychotherapy is, you know, what's commonly thought of as just therapy or talk therapy. It's engaging with either an individual or in a group format, trying to work through the traumatic symptoms, develop trust again with a safe individual and the therapist, and then use particular techniques in working through those issues to try to help you process what occurred. So the three most common, one is, as you said, EMDR. It stands for eye movement and desensitization and realization. And so it's a particular mode of therapy where there's a belief that having the person engage in specific eye movements while they're thinking about these traumatic events sort of unlocks an ability in their brain to process these things differently. It is something that's commonly used in combat veterans. Another is called cognitive processing therapy. This is, again, is a long-term psychotherapy where the person learns to talk about what happened, journals about what happened, and with the idea that if we can talk about what happened, with detached from the emotionality of it with somebody else who can help us recognize that what happened to the individual wasn't their fault, that this wasn't something that they deserved. It can help them to move forward. The last is called prolonged exposure therapy, which is sort of similar to the cognitive processing therapy I just said, but it involves really going very deeply step by step through the trauma as a way of trying to uncouple the horrible emotional reactions the person understandably has from the event themselves.
Dr. Wasser, I want to thank you so much for even outlining this, giving us a little bit of perspective into, you know, what is the next step? And again, we can't speak to every case is not cookie cutter, right? I mean, they're not all going to be the same, but even just getting an idea of what next steps could be in place for somebody who goes through such trauma of this nature. And so I want to thank you so much for what you do, Chair of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health for Hartford HealthCare's Fairfield Region, but also for taking the time to talk through it this today on WICC. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.